This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
I think that by having communities and states across the nation advancing this idea of a green amendment, talking about how our environmental laws are failing us, how a constitutional provision will provide us the greater level of protection that we need, will really heighten the conversation about the power and importance of green amendments and naturally bring people to the right conclusion.
When the crafters of the Declaration of Independence affirmed life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness as inalienable rights, they could not have known that private industry practices like fracking would one day pose grave dangers to the holders of those rights. Our guest today on Sea Change Radio, Maya Van Rossum, asserts not only that protection from these dangers should be understood as inalienable, but that environmental protections should be explicitly named in our Constitution. Van Rossum is the executive director of Delaware River Keepers and the author of a new book, The Green Amendment. We talk about her organization's success in curbing fracking in Pennsylvania, how her work serves as a potential template for fighting fracking elsewhere, and the movement underway to pass a constitutional amendment for a healthy environment. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Maya Van Rossum. She is an environmentalist, an attorney, and an author. Maya, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're the Delaware River Keeper. Explain who the Delaware River Keepers are and a little more about the organization that you head.
Sure. So as you said, I am the Delaware River Keeper. I'm the person fortunate enough to be honored to carry that title. And my technical job description as the Delaware River Keeper is to be the voice of the Delaware River. And so to make sure that the needs and the goals and the priorities of the Delaware River are brought into all of those decision-making rooms that would impact the health of the main stem river as well as all of the tributaries that feed it. But of course, protecting a river as large as the Delaware, it's 330 miles long, protecting a river as large as the Delaware or really any natural resource is not the job of one person. It really is the job of a community. And so I have an organization, the Delaware Riverkeeper Network, with 20 staff and 20,000 members. And we work throughout the entire Delaware River watershed, including the four states of New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Delaware, and at the national level, to do whatever we have to protect the health of the Delaware River for the benefit of all who depend upon the river.
And your new book is called The Green Amendment, Securing Our Right to a Healthy Environment. Why don't you tell our listeners in a nutshell, if you can, what the Green Amendment is?
My goal with the book, The Green Amendment, is really to help communities recognize that our environmental protection laws, as they're currently written and implemented, are really failing us. That despite all of the legislation and all of the regulations that we have in place, we still have polluted water and polluted air and devastated environments that are devastating people's lives, robbing them of their health and their jobs and healthy economies and good quality of life. And so we need to recognize that something more has to be done to protect our environment. And what I believe that something more is that we need to pass constitutional environmental rights amendments in every state constitution and at the federal level that recognize people's rights to clean water, clean air, and a healthy environment. And doesn't just recognize those rights, but protects those rights the same way we recognize and protect the other fundamental freedoms we hold dear, like, for example, the right to free speech and the right to freedom of religion.
And how much of your work would exist if it weren't for the fracking boom? How much do you end up fighting the oil and gas industry over these shale deposits that seem to be dotting our nation.
So at the Delaware Riverkeeper Network, our work, our organization, well preceded drilling and fracking for gas from shale. And we had plenty of work to do before those industrial operations came to the states of the Delaware River watershed, including Pennsylvania and then threatening New York. So we had a lot to do before drilling and fracking, but we have a lot more to do now that drilling and fracking has come to the region and come to the nation. And so I would say at least half of my time is spent not just battling against drilling and fracking operations, but also battling against all the infrastructure, the pipelines and the compressor stations and the export facilities that are cutting through our environments and cutting through our communities in order to service that devastating industry, which is drilling and fracking for gas.
That's why I asked, is because I assume that since you've been the executive director of Delaware Riverkeeper Network since 1994, I assumed you had been working against polluters and chemical companies, et cetera, who have put the region in environmental jeopardy. I'm wondering how, if those organizations that you used to have to fight against, have they been able to kind of fly under the radar during this fracking boom?
No, we try not to let anybody fly under the radar if they're attacking our environment and attacking our communities. We can't really afford, whether you're talking about fracking or inappropriate development or other industrial operations or polluting dischargers, we can't allow any of them to have a free walk, because all of them are having their impacts on communities and on our environment. And so, unfortunately, with drilling and fracking and pipelines and compressor stations and all of their attacks on our environment, what we really have had to do is ramp up to meet the demand of battling back environmental devastation rather than just reallocating our attention and our resources to that one industry. We just don't have the luxury of letting any of them fly under the radar. So we really had to rise up to the occasion and just increase our budgets and our actions and our activities and our memberships and all of the work we do on the ground to try to protect our environment and our communities from all of these environmental assaults. And of course, it's just gotten worse since the election of our current president.
Yes, I want to turn to that later, begrudgingly. But in the meantime, why don't we talk about your case that you were one of the original petitioners in, Robinson Township versus Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Can you lay out the case for us and kind of take us through it, if you will?
Sure. So in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania back in 1971, the state actually passed a Green Amendment, an environmental rights amendment, that recognized and protected the people's right to pure water, clean air, and a healthy environment in the Bill of Rights section of the Constitution. But pretty quickly after that provision was passed, there were some bad court decisions by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, which really, as the Chief Justice said at the time, disemboweled the provision, really relegated it to just a policy statement and robbed it of the legal force and effect that it should have had. And so for 42 years, the right to a healthy environment, while it was on the books in Pennsylvania's Constitution, it didn't have the force and effect under the law that it should have had and that we needed it to have. And so consequently, industrial operations like drilling and fracking for shale were allowed to run roughshod over Pennsylvania's environment and communities. In 2012, the Pennsylvania legislature passed a piece of legislation called Act 13. It was a piece of legislation that was literally written by the drilling and fracking industry. And it essentially made it even easier for the drillers and the frackers to run roughshod over our environment and over our communities. And it really did a lot of bad things, but I like to just sort of take one example to highlight for people how bad Act 13 was. Act 13 mandated that communities allow drilling and fracking to happen in every part of every community in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania where you had the proper shales, including the communities had to allow drilling and fracking well pads as close as 300 feet from people's homes. So if you can imagine, you know, living your whole life in a beautiful residential community only to find out one day that you could have a fracking well pad within 300 feet from your home, spewing pollution into the air and noise and literally into the ground, just how devastating that would have been. And so at the Delaware Riverkeeper Network, we have been battling drilling and fracking for many years. And of course, it had entered into the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, although I will say we did protect the Delaware River watershed from drilling and fracking. We got a moratorium put in place early on that kept it out of our watershed, but it was in our watershed states and putting pressure on the watershed to allow drilling and fracking to happen there. So we realized, you know, once Act 13 was passed that things were going to get even worse, and we had to find a way to challenge it. We did team up with 7 towns and a physician to challenge Act 13, and we each brought our own arguments to the table. At the Delaware Riverkeeper Network, we realized that this may be the moment in time to try to breathe life and strength into that Environmental Rights Amendment. So we actually argued the arguments that the Delaware Riverkeeper Network brought to the table for our team of towns and the physician was that critical provisions of the Environmental Rights Amendment violated the people's rights to pure water, clean air, and a healthy environment in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and therefore was unconstitutional. And miraculously, wonderfully, the very conservative Supreme Court of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania largely agreed with us.
Castile.
Chief Justice Castile was also, he was a conservative justice. He was the Chief Justice, and he actually wrote the plurality opinion of the case, and in which the court declared many of the provisions of Act 13 to be unconstitutional because they violated the Environmental Rights Amendment. And so in that moment, not only did we defeat some of the most devastating elements of Act 13, having them declared unconstitutional, but we literally breathed life into the Environmental Rights Amendment of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And so in December of 2013, it was almost as if the Environmental Rights Amendment just got passed in December of 2013. And we now had the right to a healthy environment in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And after all these years of environmental advocacy, I finally got to see the power and importance of constitutional recognition to environmental rights. And that's what sort of led me on the journey to create the Green Amendment movement, or try to create it, and to write the book, The Green Amendment.
It'll be okay on the healing day. No more going astray on the healing day. Yeah, we'll find our way on the healing day. Where the children play on the healing day.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Maya Van Rossum. She is the Delaware Riverkeeper, the author of The Green Amendment, and an environmental advocate.
So you were the lead plaintiff in Robinson Township, Delaware Riverkeeper versus the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, 2013 case, which was settled in 2016, and you were victorious. You talk about entering the case as a risky proposition. You didn't expand on that too much in the book, and I wanted to ask you to expand on it here, because what is the downside for potential litigants who want to bring a case? What is the downside for losing these cases? Obviously, the upside is to protect our environment, but where is the risk?
Well, in the case of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, I think the only risk is that you have a court which fails to properly implement the law and recognize the power and the importance of the Environmental Rights Amendment. And that's what happened almost as soon as the Environmental Rights Amendment in Pennsylvania was passed. There were some bad choices made in terms of litigation, and people really tried to overreach in how they tried to use that Environmental Rights Amendment to prevent activities that were taking place. And in reaction, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court also overreached in the negative direction, in that they really did just claim that the Environmental Rights Amendment was a statement of policy rather than recognizing it as having the same legal effect as the other provisions in the Bill of Rights of Pennsylvania's Constitution, like the right to free speech, freedom of religion, and private property rights. So that's really the only downside, the way I see it, is that you have a court that gets it wrong. But even if you have a court that gets it wrong, you then have the opportunity, as you know, people in this nation, to over time force them to get it right by through good advocacy and good legal choices down the road. And that's what we did with our legal action against Act 13. Was we really realized that the drilling and fracking industry had so overreached in how they were trying to undermine environmental and community protection laws in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, that this really was the moment to get the court to wake up and take notice and recognize that they had made a grave error 42 years before when they really, again, as the Chief Justice said it at the time, emasculated, disemboweled the Environmental Rights Amendment in those early years.
Let's break down the economics of these resources as well. We often look at oil exploration in Nigeria and point to that as a resource curse because the people of Nigeria as a whole have not benefited from the discovery of oil in their country. But then we look at our country and we kind of think we're an exception. This is just a great economic boom to America. It's all about our independence from Middle East oil, if you listen to politicians. But there's a real cost attached to exploring for oil and gas to the level that we're doing. I just read recently that Oklahoma, one of the biggest fracking states, 91 of Oklahoma's school districts are only able to afford to be open for 4 days a week right now. The people as a whole are not enjoying the fruits of the fracking industry like, let's say, Norway. Why don't you talk about how you see your fight in Pennsylvania and the Delaware River region as a template for people, let's say, in Oklahoma?
So drilling and fracking is devastating every aspect of people's lives where it's happening. Literally every aspect of their lives. Now many, hopefully, have read in the newspaper about the water contamination that has resulted from drilling and fracking operations. Streams, groundwaters, as well as drinking water supplies are being contaminated because of the drilling and fracking operations, literally taking from people their drinking water. But drilling and fracking also spews hazardous air pollutants into the air, which people have to breathe. It results in a tremendous devastation to the land. Whenever the drillers and the frackers come in, you know, what I like to say, whether it's the drilling and the fracking end of the operation or the pipelines and compressor stations, whatever natural ecosystems or whatever land uses are in their path at the time, all of those land uses have to fall by the wayside to accommodate the industry. So the forests get cut, the wetlands get damaged. In the case of pipelines and compressor stations, people lose their property rights through the power of eminent domain that gets used to take it. We have literally hundreds of millions of gallons of fracking wastewater that gets created, and that is so dangerous that even the industry doesn't know how to treat it or what to do with it other than to reuse it for other fracking operations or to ship it to other states where they inject it into the ground in the hopes that it gets locked away, never to be seen again. What that means actually for a state like Oklahoma, interesting that you mentioned them, a lot of that frack wastewater actually goes to Oklahoma for injection into the ground, and it's creating earthquakes. And so while earthquakes in the state of Oklahoma were very rare, you know, a decade or so ago, now you have hundreds of earthquakes a year. Some years, Oklahoma is now the earthquake capital of the United States of America, directly because of the injection of this highly toxic frack wastewater into the ground.
Yes, so we actually did a piece, I think September 26, 2017, with a geophysicist from the U.S. Geological Survey, Ole Kavin, who talked about the connection in Oklahoma between earthquakes and gas exploration. I highly recommend our listeners go to seachangeradio.com and check that out in our archives. But you were talking about the resource curse and kind of the fool's gold that comes with this gas exploration.
You know, the economic assessments that are done around the oil and gas industry really show that to the extent that there are profits and gains to be made, they're really to be made by the industrial, you know, the drillers and the fracking owners themselves. It's not really about enhancing communities. Jobs that are created are short-lived. The drilling and fracking industry is very much patterns that boom-bust economic cycle that was experienced by coal. So you might have jobs that are created, direct jobs and indirect jobs that are created in communities in the early stages of the drilling and fracking that takes places, but relatively quickly those jobs get lost and the towns almost get abandoned as the drillers and frackers move on, you know, to the next site. And then you have another wave of boom bust cycling. For those that get left behind, they've lost their property values. They've lost the quality of their lives. They've lost their health. Many of them have lost their drinking water supplies. And, you know, you can't sell a home unless you have a good source of drinking water. And the thing is, so the economics really don't play out. And the really sad part of it is that we don't need the gas that's being extracted from the shale through these highly industrial operations. We don't need fracked gas. First off, there's plenty of gas in the U.S. right now to accommodate that bridge over to the clean energy future. More drilling and fracking is not a bridge. It's a bridge to devastation. It is not a bridge to a healthy, clean future. But also, you know, clean energy options are genuinely here today. We have solar, we have wind, we have geothermal, and we have new clean energy strategies being developed all the time. And when you look at the economics, that really is where the value lies for communities. If you look at just the amount of jobs that result from investment in these types of different energy strategies, for every $1 million invested in clean energy versus dirty fossil fuels like fracked shale gas, you create 3 to 5 times the number of jobs. You don't just create more jobs, but you create jobs that are more enduring. They don't have that boom-bust phase. These are long-term jobs for individuals and for families that they can rely upon. They also tend to be jobs where there's greater access for people to come in sort of at the entry-level stages of the business and then can work their way up through the industry to more responsibility and more pay over time. So they're better jobs, they're more enduring jobs, they're better paying jobs, and there are more of them if we go down the green energy path versus the dirty fossil fuel, the fracked gas path.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Maya Van Rossum. She's the author of The Green Amendment. So Maya, let's get back to the Green Amendment for a minute, if you will. What will it cost, and what do we need to do to fight for it? Maybe you can kind of direct our listeners to take action.
What green amendments get you is it gets you another layer of protection for these fundamentally important aspects of our lives, for the water we drink, the air we breathe, and the natural environments that we depend upon. Now, there are only two states in the nation that have a green amendment like the one I'm talking about that recognizes the right to a healthy environment in the Bill of Rights section on par with those other freedoms like the right to free speech and gun rights and other rights that people hold dear. The only states that have them are Pennsylvania and Montana. There are 15 states that don't talk about the environment in their constitutions at all, and there are 33 states that talk about the environment in their constitutions, but they relegate it to a much lower level of protection. They by their own terms, just describe themselves as being good public policy or dependent on state legislators to pass good laws to give them recognition and life. But they don't recognize the individual right as well as the community right to a healthy environment. And so they're fundamentally different, and they don't have the power and the stature that's needed to give us this extra level of protection that I'm arguing for. So every state has a state constitution. So every state can fight for a green amendment, an environmental rights amendment. And it just takes time, effort, and advocacy. And if people go to forthegenerations.org, they can find some good materials that I and my organization have created to sort of help spur this movement along. And they can also be in touch with me directly. And I will be happy to help them craft a good green amendment for their state that they could advocate for. I think that by having communities in states across the nation advancing this idea of a green amendment, talking about how our environmental laws are failing us, how a constitutional provision will provide us the greater level of protection that we need, will really heighten the conversation about the power and importance of green amendments and naturally bring people to the right conclusion, which is that we don't only need green amendments in all of our state constitutions, but we need a green amendment in our federal constitution, because it is only a federal constitutional provision that can check the power of the president and the Congress, particularly the current president and the current Congress, who are just on a wholesale onslaught of attacks against our natural resources that we all need to have healthy, thriving lives.
Maya Van Rossum, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Lettuce and Bill Fay.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.